Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 per hour plus a $175 weekly bonus for some shifts. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Bet Rivers Sportsbook has supercharged its iOS app. Download the update today from the Apple App Store and see the difference for yourself. Must be 21 or over to play. Playable only in Indiana. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
Keep it locked with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
Kenny Rogers. That's what you requested. You're the big dog
as
here.
As requested.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Big dog gets his way, doesn't he?
Of course.
Yeah. Good.
Welcome back, Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel on ESPN Louisville and Kenny Rogers and Process.
And Desperado.
And Desperado.
We got, I'm going to read a little bit here, Dan, about this coaching moves by John Calipari, hiring Orlando Antigua. He says, I'm excited to be headed back to Lexington. The chance to work at Kentucky again, a program where we built a lot of special memories, is one I am grateful for. I'm looking forward to getting my feet on the ground in Lexington and getting this going again. And Calipari follows that up talking about Ron Chin Coleman, who I don't know, but he's coming from Illinois with O. And he says, Calipari says that Coleman is in the same mold as Orlando. An upbeat guy, positive coach, who's going to bring the spirit that always has been part of our culture. Said Chin is a grinder, someone who relishes that time in the gym with the kids to help add value to your current players. So also known as an excellent recruiter. And I remember, and why I read those and why I think it's important is this, Dan. Last summer, I'm talking to Calipari about something else, and we started talking about coaches and assistants and different things, mutual people we knew and whatever. It took us to this. He said, you know, I'm going to have to make some moves in my coaching staff. I said, okay. He said, recruiting is not like it was back in the day. He said, I need someone to go 24-7 in this recruiting process nowadays. And right after that, he brought in Jay Lucas, a young fella.
John Lucas, I know John very well. It was my one of my assistants in Denver.
And he used to, whenever we played there at Houston, he used to come see us. Nasselke, Tom.
Yeah.
You know, he played for Tom.
Yeah.
Tom really helped him through some tough times.
Very tough times.
And he was very close to Tom. So he'd come in and see us, and we'd see, and he knew Gene Littles. And Jay Lucas is wired pretty good to Texas guys. Matter of fact, the big fella that they have signed already, is committed and going to be here, is the guy that that Jay recruited, I understand, when he was at Texas. And, of course, the kid followed him to Kentucky. He's about 6'10", big, long wingspan. So this recruiting thing, particularly with the portal, you got to recruit these kids every daggone year. It's not like a one-time deal. Okay, I'm going to recruit Dan Issel, and I got him signed. I just let him come play. I don't worry about it. We'll work on his game. But you got to recruit him every year now.
Well, it sounds like you have to recruit him every day.
Well, that might be true, too. You might be
right and you know, with all these kids going in the portal, that it seems to me that that's just doubled what the coaches have to do. And you know, I'm my – my position on the portal is there's so many kids in there because, you know, you're being recruited in high school if it's 24/7 and these coaches are telling you how great you are and what a great career you're going to have at their school. And then you get there and you find out that there's, you know, 10 other guys on the team just as good as you are, and you kind of fall through the cracks a little bit. Well, why wouldn't you go in the portal and get to experience that all over again? Have people tell you how great you are and come to our school and it'll be better than where you were. And, you know, that's just human nature. We all like to have attention paid to us and told how great we are, and going into the portal just gives these kids a second chance at that.
What other thing of note? Bruiser Flint, who joined Calipari staff last year, will be elevated to the associate to the head coach position, which Tony Barbee had. So that opens up the ability for Ron Coleman to hit the bricks and recruit, as we were talking about, and also gives Calipari somebody in that role that Tony Barbee had, scouting future opponents, those kind of things. And he's a guy that Cal can trust. He's known him forever. He's had two head coaching experiences. Okay, Bruiser has. So, I mean, he's got some things that he brings to the table to really be of help, as Tony Barbee did with his head coaching experience for Calipari.
Let me ask you this, because I'm not that familiar with the goings-on of the assistant coaches. Does Kentucky send a scout to the game of a future opponent, or do they just
can't do that anymore?
Oh, you can't?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
You have to do everything off of tape?
Yes.
You watch the tape and write up your report?
Correct.
And
the interesting thing,
why did they stop that?
I don't know. Probably cost savings.
Hmm.
Probably the mid majors and low majors probably said, you know, I mean, I don't know, but they're involved in the NCAA. They have a vote, so they passed it and said, you can't do that. You can't scout off campus. Now, schools like Louisville, Kentucky, North Carolina, they have invested a lot of money in the telecommunications area.
Sure.
They tape practices. They break them down. They belong to a service that does taping of all kinds of games, to include theirs. They've got all kinds of access to what's going on in the basketball world to view either, and they can break them down. You know how it was when you were working in the NBA. When they brought that machine, when I was with the Hornets, I was used to just watching tape. Okay.
Right, and stop, having to start. Stop and
yeah.
back it up.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So when we bought this machine, we had a young fella down there was had been a high school coach, and they brought him in, Fletcher Gregory. He was sharp, man. He was a good guy. And Bristow ended up dumping him too, but he was a good guy, sharp guy, understood it. He spent hours. He would break down, he put us a breakdown tape together, and maybe you had this too, where he edited. This machine would allow him to type in what – he yep, wanted yep. edited, and he could break a game film down from, you know, 65-minute game film down to 2 minutes, whatever you wanted. And it was the neatest thing. And now, of course, they've got 60 million of those. You know, I mean, everybody's
right.
got one of
well,
those.
Well, I think I said before, I told you before that Mike Brown, who has been an NBA head coach several places, I think the last place he was head coach was at Cleveland, but he's now the assistant coach, the number one assistant coach for Steve Kerr in Golden State. He was, when I was coaching the Nuggets, he was our video guy, and he would prepare tapes, just, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of the first half, and so that when we went in at halftime, yeah. we had a breakdown of things that were going on, either things we did well or, in our case, it was mostly things we did poorly. But it was you know, that's how sophisticated, and you know, that was 15 years ago. So I'm sure it's even
yeah.
better than that today. But I didn't know you couldn't scout off campus.
No,
anymore.
No, that used to be. As you well know, I mean, that you would go see a team a couple times if you
yeah.
could afford to.
Yeah.
And you would see them before you played them a couple times if again, it was scheduled right. So, no, you can't. You do everything off the tape now.
Mm.
But it's so sophisticated with that taping.
Right.
And all the angles they have. And of course, they keep, if for example, the portal people. they can pull whatever they want on a player. You wonder how do they know this guy at Arizona State? Well, they go to their service and they request ball games that this Bagley kid played in, and they'll send it to him and they'll break it down and show everybody. Yeah.
I'll be glad when this portal thing is over with. You're sick. No, seriously, you're sick.
Well, I may go in the portal. All right, Ron Coleman, he's been 4 years at 10 college coaches coaching seasons, spent at Illinois, University of Illinois, Chicago, Bradley, Nebraska, and Colorado State.
Mm.
So he's got some connections. He's got some experience. He's a good pickup, and we all know O's a big pickup, and we'll have to effort finding O sometime after he gets settled in and get him on the show, and maybe even Chin Coleman. Who knows? We'll just ask, and all they can do is say no, right?
That's exactly right.
So that's a big it's been a big 10 days. I would think, with both of these fellas coming on board and the people that they had been looking at to bring in, they've got maybe some new names added.
Probably.
Some better connections.
Yep.
The one kid that played at Illinois, the freshman kid, is declared to go to LSU, and I guess they made him a strong-ass offer. You remember Wade, the coach, saying that? Yeah. So anyway, some people thought that he might come to Kentucky with these two guys, with Orlando and Chin, but he's already taken the strong-ass offer, probably.
Now that
you like a, that, don't you?
That was a good one. That was a good one. And you know what? Going back to our favorite people at the NCAA, with having that on tape, he's still there coaching. Figure that one out.
Terrible, terrible image to let all these people out that are involved in this, that they have the goods on, let them twist. That's just terrible.
I was talking to Marcus the other day before we came on the show, and I said, you know, when I was a little kid, I remember that when I did something bad, which was quite often, and my mother would say, wait till your dad gets home.
Oh, yeah.
And you knew that the whipping was coming. Did you get spanked when you were?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, you can't do that anymore, but the time of waiting between when you did the bad thing and your dad getting home was worse than the whipping, you know, because once you knew the whipping was coming, you got slapped a couple of times on the rear end and it was over and you cried and that was the end of it. But waiting those 4 or 5 hours was excruciating until your father. And that's exactly what these programs are going through now.
It's not fair.
No, it's not fair. Tell them what the penalty is. Get it over with and let's get on with it. I mean, this is now going on 3 or 4 years. What in the world is going on here? I don't understand it at all.
I think the NCAA thinks it's just part of the punishment. That's the only thing I can think of, because it makes no sense. They go, well, Process and Pratt and Issel, they've got this committee, but you know they are all working at a university someplace, because it is a member institution driven NCAA, and they can only meet once a quarter or whatever it may be. Okay, but saying that, I mean, this has been 4, 5, 6 years.
I know.
A lot of quarters, right, Process?
And how could you get anybody? I mean, you know, and I've said this before about Mac here at U of L, you know that any time a school is recruiting against Louisville, the first words out of their mouths are going to be, you know, why would you go to Louisville? They're going on probation. You know, and so it's so unfair. Just give it the penalty, get the whipping over with, and let's go on.
Yeah. And there was no, when I was young, we didn't have a timeout corner, okay, like they have now. It was just like you said, wait till your dad gets home. And then your dad gets home, and whether you get a little dusting on the buns. But my dad always said, tell me about what's going on. So I tell him about what happened. Okay, my side. My mother had already told him her side, whatever it was. Okay, so then the worst thing in the world, to your point, is when he said, you know, go to your room, let me think about what the punishment's going to be. So about a day later, you know, you hear what the – and you well, just sweated dad, bullets.
Your dad was very fair. You got to tell your side of the story.
Yeah.
I can't remember ever getting to tell my side of the story.
What could you guys have possibly done to get a whooping? What did you all do? What did you do, Dan?
I remember the worst whipping I ever got was we grew up on a farm, and there was – we had a sow – that was about to give birth. And I thought, as a little guy, I thought that sow needed something to eat. And I took like 2 bushel baskets of corn and threw it into the sow's pen. And that was the worst whipping I ever got.
That's it?
That's it.
Jesus.
Whoa,
that's not bad. I don't know.
What do you think I did? Steal a car?
I thought it would be simply. You were like, oh, I'm going to help out a sow because it's pregnant. I don't know. That seems like a very, very nice thing to do. I feel like if had you been able to give your side of the story, you could have gotten away with it.
That's right. No. You've got to have your side of the story, brother.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, sometimes I don't know if he was listening or not.
When my dad saw all those corn cobs in the pen, I didn't get to say my side.
You were cooked. You could stick a fork in you, right?
I was gone.
Yeah.
I was gone.
I'll tell you, another guy we have to give a big shout out, and we should try to get him on, is John Hood. John Hood played at Kentucky, was Mr. Basketball, I believe, here in Kentucky, was on the championship team in 12. He had been recently, he coached a little high school, assistant coach, I believe, at Dunbar or one of the Lexington schools. Went to Kentucky Wesleyan last year as an assistant, and going to Western Missouri, okay? And you got to climb the ladder when you're
sure.
an assistant.
Yeah, you don't get the Kentucky job off of being an assistant.
But what really is cool about it is I like John a lot. He was he was a Kentucky guy that wanted to play at Kentucky, and he stayed the course, and people had big expectations for him when he came. And, you know, he played – but didn't start, but he played.
Right.
And he could shoot the ball. And he persevered through a lot of things while he was at Kentucky. Okay, expectations from the fan. He had to deal with limited minutes, but he played on some terrific teams, the 12 championship team. So here's the neat thing is, Will Martin, he was a manager at Kentucky at that time. Mm-hmm. He's the head coach at Western Missouri. And he hired him. And that connection from that championship team. He brought him on board at Western Missouri. That's pretty cool.
So the manager's going to be the assistant?
Manager's the head coach.
The head
Will Martin.
Coach?
Yeah, Will Martin's the head coach, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's pretty cool, though.
That's very cool.
Yeah, they obviously were terrific friends when they were at Kentucky. But for him to bring – it would be a step up. I mean, you have to take all those steps. And Hoodie was at Kentucky Wesleyan in NAIA school, I believe. It was D2 and very powerful.
Oh, team. Absolutely.
And he goes out there. It'll be interesting to follow his career because he knows basketball. He's a sharp basketball guy. And Will Martin obviously was under Calipari and learned a lot as a manager. Boy. Those managers, man, I'm telling you what, it wasn't like it was back in the day, Dan. Those guys, they not that they didn't always work,
yeah.
But I mean, they're rolling, man. When they roll, they've got to. Of course, we didn't travel with a whiteboard. We didn't travel with all the machinery that comes with. Doing the taping of the games and all that. We didn't travel.
All we traveled with was a suitcase with the bourbon and the beer in it.
For the trainer and Adolf. And
Coach Rupp's inner circle when we went on the road.
But these guys now have to load it up, have to unload from the plane when we land and put it in the bus and then take it out of the bus and set it up. I mean, people don't understand. Until I didn't either, the way the managing game has changed and what demands they have. And that's not to include practice or setting up the locker room before they've got to go down, set the locker room up, set the coach's room up, make sure everything's ready to go. No mistakes when the team gets there and the coaches get there. It's
yeah, but there's about six of them in there.
There is, yeah.
What I like is when the TV time out comes and they come racing out with the stools. That's the part I like, watch the managers.
And he gets on me about the transfer portal. I mean, come on. Now, when you were doing TV, did you pay attention to that?
To what?
Where the seats were? Who's brought the seats out for the players?
We didn't have seats. You stood up and listened to the coach, or you sat down on the bench. I guess the seats are so the people in the first couple of rows behind the bench can't hear the coach chewing you out, huh?
Well, sometimes coaches will move the benches out on the floor, so
right.
They can't be heckled, I guess, from the people behind, or maybe the how loud the music is.
Right.
They bring them out on the floor. But I got a question for you, and I'll answer from my side. When you coached in the NBA, did you all your timeouts you stood up, or did you sit down in some form or fashion?
Well, for the shorter timeouts, for the 20-second timeouts, we just all stood up. But for the full timeouts, the players sat down on the bench, and the trainer would bring a chair out, and I'd sit on the chair in front of the bench. But they weren't listening anyway, so it didn't matter where we were sitting.
Well, I sat too.
I had a couple of kids that would really look me in the eye and listen to what I was saying. But the most part, you know, they were drinking water and looking. The worst part, I learned this very, very early on in my coaching career.
You learned it from Doug Moe.
No, I didn't learn anything from Doug Moe. We made the mistake. You know, you always have the TV with game tape and stuff on in the locker room. So while the players are getting dressed or something, they can watch the previous game.
If they choose.
Against that team. And the first couple of times that I got up to talk. Of course, I'd never coached before. I didn't know. I mean, the hardest thing for me was going to the board and drawing. You know, I couldn't even draw a free throw lane with a basket. And so I had to learn all that stuff on the fly. But I would go and start the pregame talk and not turn off the TV. So I'm looking around the locker room, and there's not one player looking at me. They're all looking past me, still watching the game on the TV behind. Well, it took me two or three games, but then I realized you had to shut off the TV before you started talking, or nobody would listen to what you were saying.
Well, putting time in as an assistant, I learned it. My first job with Lee Rose at Charlotte, he wanted me to put something on the board, and Everett Bass or myself would break down simple stuff from the scouting report on
sure,
the board.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm writing it, and Lee comes in and sees it and doesn't say anything. But afterwards, he tells me, "Mike, you have to print it. You can't write it." He said, "You have to print it." So I'm going, I'm like you. That's my first coaching job. We never had a whiteboard when I was at Kentucky or the Colonels. We never, I mean, they people. Frank would draw up plays on the cement, in the locker room back then. I mean, you know, with the Colonels, you didn't have any of that. So I had to learn to print it legibly. Okay, I had to do that, and that was part of the learning process. And when I was an assistant with the Colonels, I had to put up all that stuff before the game.
Yeah,
and had to draw the floor. And,
right.
And I think some places that had the floor,
already on the whiteboard.
You caught a break there.
Yeah, absolutely. What we would do is we had three assistant coaches, and the assistant coaches would take time with the scouting report. So if it was every third game, you had the responsibility of putting everything on the board, going over it, and then I would finish up the talk. But I quickly found a way not to have to draw on the board in front of anybody.
Oh, that's funny. Process, we need to take a break. Let's get out of here, and we'll be back for the second half hour.
Of the second hour.
Of the second hour. Sports Talk, Dan Issel, Mike Pratt, ESPN Louisville.
Get ready for Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
And welcome back to Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel on ESPN Louisville. We're glad that you're here with us. And horse racing gets back started today at Churchill Downs. I think they have what they call it, a twilight card, that first race is 5:30 or 5:40 or something like that. I want to clean up something we talked about yesterday, Michael, and that is we were talking about Mike Smith and possibly not having a ride in the Preakness, and Mike is going to ride concert tour for Baffert. Remember, Rosario rode him in the Arkansas Derby, and I don't know why Mike didn't ride him, because Mike has been on the horse before. I don't know why he rode him and didn't ride him in the Arkansas Derby.
Did he have a ride in the Arkansas Derby? I don't think he did. No.
But he'll be on concert tour in the Preakness. And right now it looks like we're looking at a 10 or 11 horse field. There's a horse, and I'm sure I'm butchering this name, called France Godaina. He's from Japan.
Oh, no.
From Japan, and he ran in the UAE Derby.
Okay.
And finished sixth. So I don't think he has much of a shot in the Preakness, but he is coming, and that's who Rosario is going to ride. He picked up the mount there. And again, it looks like not very many horses coming back from the Derby. Medina Spirit, obviously. Midnight Bourbon, who finished sixth in the Derby, is with Mike Smith.
Right. He's entered?
He hasn't entered yet, but it looks like he's going to come back. And then Keep Me In Mind, who finished seventh in the Derby, is going to come back and run in the Preakness. And then we still haven't heard from Brad Cox on Mandaloon or Cato River. I would imagine at least one of those horses would run, if not both of them. But we'll know more after they'll probably go back to the track and they'll see how they're galloping and how their horses usually don't work again between the Derby and the Preakness, but they'll monitor their level of interest when they go to the track. And but I would guess that Mandaloon and Cato River, if not both of them, would be back in the Preakness. And so next week, we'll get more into the Preakness. Of course, ESPN Louisville is the official home of the Preakness Stakes, and we'll get some more people on to talk about the Preakness next week.
We know what Mandaloon can do.
Yeah.
Okay. What about Cato River?
What's he
cut out for?
Well, he's a nice horse, but I think he definitely is a horse that has to be on the lead. And so I don't know if Baffert, the reason that he's going back to Mike Smith and Rosario comes off of concert tour, if he wasn't happy with the ride in the Arkansas Derby, because Brad Cox tried to rate, and Florent Giroux is the jockey, and they knew concert tour was a speed horse in the Arkansas Derby, and in the Rebel, they took back off, and Cato River didn't run a step. I think he finished sixth. And so they went back in the Arkansas Derby. They went back to putting the horse on the lead. And, of course, he went out very fast fractions head-to-head with Concert Tour and set it up for Superstock to come from off the pace. But it looks like to me, if you have a horse, you really can't take them out of their style of running. I mean, if you have a horse that has to be on the lead, You know, you might say, well, we'll take him off the lead, and he just doesn't fire. Or if you have a horse that comes from way behind and you try to put him up to the pace, you know, you can't make him run a different style. So
you can't make a non-shooter a shooter.
I remember a long time ago, we had Sherry and I owned a horse called Secretarial Queen. We owned it with Tommy Gentry, a dear friend of ours from Lexington. And she was out of the first crop of Secretariat. And she came from out of it. There was no way. She won a stake, a $50,000 stake at Hollywood Park in California, then came back and ran second in the Hollywood Oaks, which was at that time a big, big deal. It was a $100,000 race. We went to Del Mar, and the Del Mar Oaks is run on the grass. And she had never been on the grass before. And Daryl McHard, who is in the Racing Hall of Fame, rode her. And
I never heard of him. Is he a California guy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know him. Don't know him.
So we're at – Gentry didn't go, but we're at Del Mar, Sherry and I, for the prep for the Del Mar Oaks, first time Secretarial Queen had been on the grass. So I get paged about three or four races before this race. I get paged to the Maitre d' stand. And, you know, when you get paged to the Maitre d' stand at a racetrack, it's never a good idea. That's how I found out that I had been traded to the Baltimore Claws. Sherry Sheridan and I were at the old Louisville Downs, the harness track over here that is now Derby City.
Sure, sure.
And we were there and got paged to the press box, and Ellie Brown told me I'd been traded to the Baltimore Claws. So it's never a good sign. So I go to the Maitre d's desk. And I said hello, and the guy on the phone says, this is Harry the Hat. Well, Harry the Hat was Shoemaker's agent. And Harry the Hat says, Mr. Issel. Now, I'm like 25 years old, and the most famous horse racing jockey agent in the world is calling me Mr. Issel. He said, Daryl just took off of his mounts because he has an upset stomach. He said, would it be all right if the shoe rode your horse? I said,
the shoe, really?
I said, yeah, Harry, I think that'd be all right. And so we go down to the paddock, and we ran that horse. I don't know if Tommy Gentry ever ran a horse with partners in somebody else's silks except his own. But, you know, we were dear friends, and he let me – and Sherry designed silks for Secretarial Queen, and she ran in our silks. And so here comes Shoemaker in our silks to ride Secretarial Queen.
You got a picture,
Queen.
Don't you?
No,
oh,
no,
please.
We don't have a camera. No, no camera phones, or we don't have a camera. We don't have anything. And so it was really a neat moment in the horse racing that Shoemaker. So now she comes from way out of it, going down the backside. She's got to be 20 lengths behind the next to the last place horse. And I'm thinking, oh, man, I got Bill Shoemaker riding my horse, and he's going to ease her in the middle of the race. Well, here she comes running, and it was a mile and a 16th on the grass. She comes running like a freight train, and she finished third, but got beat maybe a length and a half. So we're thinking, okay, man, this is great prep race. The Del Mar Oaks is a mile and an eighth, and she can run on the grass, and she'll come from behind, and we got a great shot to win the Del Mar Oaks. Well, Shu was out of town when they had the Oaks, and he was riding, I think, Spectacular Bid someplace else. And so we go to the paddock, and Gentry's there, and we get a different jockey. It wasn't Daryl McHard. I won't say his name. And so,
strike that one. I won't say his name.
And so, you know, the trainer's there, and Gentry's there, and I said, did you watch the allowance race, the prep race, you know, where she was way, way out of it, and she came running, and this race is an eighth of a mile, a 16th of a mile further, and that's exactly how you have to run the race. Well, I guess this jockey thought that, you know, if I put her up closer to the lead, and then she has that kick, you know, she'll win by a ton. So they start the race, and he's got Secretary Queen in fifth place, about five lengths off the lead. And she was five lengths off the lead at the beginning, and she was five lengths off the lead when they hit the finish line. You can't take them out of the way they want to run. I just know one thing. That jockey's glad that Gentry didn't have a gun that day, or he'd no longer be with us.
Who is your trainer?
She was trained the same trainer that trained Tiz Now, who Tiz Now's the only horse to win back-to-back Breeders' Cup Classic races.
Right. And, good horse.
Yeah, and I'm look and see who trained Tiz Now.
He's sired a lot of good horses.
Yeah, yeah. Robbins, Jay Robbins.
Oh, wow.
Jay Robbins
don't
is
know
the
that name.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and Jay trained Secretarial Queen for us.
Del Mar, and if listeners have never been there, one of the most gorgeous places to see a race or races, and all the, you know, the beautiful people from California come down there. I mean, it's a zoo. But my brother, one time, a few years ago, my wife and I were out visiting my brother who lives in Rancho Mirage, suburb of Palm Springs. And so he likes the horses too. We decide to go over to Del Mar.
Yeah, no, if you haven't been there, it's a beautiful place.
So he got a table outside. You know where they have the tables outside?
Sure. Yeah, they're all outside.
Are they?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
No, they're all there. There is no indoor dining at Del Mar.
They've got a bar in that overlooks the paddock upstairs,
right,
on the second floor.
Yeah.
And I think you can eat in there a little bit.
Yeah, I think so.
But
yeah,
he got a table outside, and it was a beautiful day, and we sat there and we ate and had a couple beers and just bet on the races. It's there's Keeneland's beautiful, Churchill's cool, all that stuff, Saratoga, but that course is just one of the most spectacular I've ever been at,
and it backs right up to the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
At the head of the stretch, if you're looking up the head of the stretch, if you just raise your head a couple of inches, you're looking at the Pacific Ocean. It's beautiful.
Don't they call that where the surf meets the turf?
Yep. It was Del Mar was started by Bing Crosby and Jimmy Durante. They went to La Jolla and built Del Mar Racetrack, and it used to be just all of the movie stars. If you read the history of Del Mar and the beginning of the track, all of the movie stars used to go there in the late summer.
The beautiful people.
In fact, the turf course at Del Mar is still named the Jimmy Durante Turf.
Oh, really?
Turf course. Yep.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Wow. Wow. Well, let's switch to a little, before we wrap this up, let's switch to a little pro basketball. And you were talking about how the playoffs work, and everybody but LeBron James seems to think the playoffs, this is a pretty good deal.
And Mark Cuban.
And anybody that's got his kind of money and wears jeans and, you know, I got to wonder what kind of messages he's saying. But there's a lot of great races right now going on in the NBA.
Yeah.
A lot of great races.
And when they came up with this idea, I'm sure this is exactly what they had in mind to keep some of these teams from tanking. Right now in the East, Miami and Boston have the same record for 6-7, 35-31. But Boston, I believe you said, has the advantage right now, but they play another couple of times before the season is over. So right now, Boston is in 6th. Miami in 7th, Charlotte at 8th, Pacers in 9th, and the Wizards, Washington Wizards, are in 10th. And then Toronto's about 3 games behind Washington. So if the season ended today, the way it would work would Miami would play Charlotte, 1 game play-in. Pacers would play Washington. And then the winner of the Miami-Charlotte would be the 7th seed. And then the loser of Miami-Charlotte would play the winner of Indiana-Washington, and they'd be the 8th seed. And then the losers would then go into the lottery. They'd have lottery picks, but it would be at the very end of the lottery, which is it's very difficult to move up from there. And so those are good races. And then in the West, you've got the Lakers are only a half a game out of the seventh spot, which is why LeBron thinks it's a bad idea. But right now, Portland is 7, Memphis 8, Golden State 9, and San Antonio 10. And the Pelicans are a game and a half behind San Antonio. So I think the NBA got exactly what they were looking for when they came up with this play-in idea.
And the other thing, first of all, this Portland team is sneaky. They're sneaky. Watch them. And they're not going to win at all, but they could hurt some people in the playoffs.
Did you hear that Stott might be in trouble? Terry Stott, the head coach, might
well,
be in
trouble.
Well,
I want to go there about coaches. There's a couple other guys. Stott might be in trouble. He's been there a long time, and I guess that he hasn't gone deep enough into the playoffs. The guy at Milwaukee, he's got a heck of a team. And, you know, they could win it. And I read someplace where there's rumor going around. Of course, it's like everything else. It's he said, she said, you don't know for sure, that if he doesn't win it all, he's gone. And the guy at the Pacers, he's on thin ice. And
he's only been – this is his first year, right?
First or second, yeah.
Yeah.
He came from Toronto, was an assistant at Toronto.
Well, I would say, looking at the standings right now, I would say there's a good chance that the Pacers don't make the playoffs. But
did you have to fire a coach when you were GM?
Yeah, it was I had to fire a couple of them.
Really? I lost somebody.
It was, hey, if you're a GM, if you know, you know how to handle the situation, a good GM can outlast three coaches. So
I never thought of three being the magic number, but I figure you got at least two shots at it.
No, and one guy that I had to fire was a teammate of mine and used to be a good friend. I don't think we're too
remain anonymous.
No, I can say his name, Bill Hanslick, who played at Notre Dame and was a teammate of mine with the Nuggets. And when I took over the GM's role, in the late 90s, we were coming off a season when I think the Nuggets, Alan Bristow was the GM, and he was released in the middle of the season. And
he really got mad at you, didn't he?
Yeah, well, that's a whole other story. But anyway.
I know, Bristow. I'm messing with you, you know.
How much time do we have? Do you care? Is any of this stuff interesting? Do you
I'm care? Loving it. I'm looking up right now. Bill Hanslick. I'm backtracking. I'm trying to see what that is.
So Charlie Lyons was running the Nuggets, okay? And Charlie calls me up one day and he says, we need you back with the organization. I had been out of the Nuggets organization since I got fired the first time I coached the Nuggets. And I'd been out of the organization for a couple of times, for a couple of years. And Charlie calls me up and says, we need you back in the organization. Well, the reason he wanted me back in the organization is because they stunk. I think they won like 11 games that year.
Yes. So.
11
under Hanslick and Bristow.
Yeah.
And so, I can see that.
So he said. So he says to me, he says, "I want you to meet with Alan Bristow." And so I meet with Alan, and you know, there was some history there. There was a time when I was on one side with Pete Babcock and Rob Babcock, and then Doug Mo and Hanslick and Bristow were on the other side. And so there was some history there. So I meet with Alan Bristow, and I think we're going to talk about a job, about me coming back to the Nuggets. And Bristow proceeds to tell me, he said, you know, you're very popular in this city. He said, I think you should run for mayor, and I'll do everything I can do to help you run for mayor. So I go home and I tell Sherry, that was a waste of time. Bristow doesn't want me there, which, of course, he didn't want me there. And so nothing happens. And about 6 months later, my dad and I are at a sports bar watching some game. And Charlie comes in and picks up an order to go, Charlie Lyons. And I kind of gave him the cold shoulder. I said, hi. I was pleasant, but, you know, I wasn't going to sit there and talk. And so he called me the next day and he said, what's wrong? And I said, well, Charlie, you said you wanted me in the organization And Bristow's tells me I ought to run for mayor. And he says, is that what happened? And I said, yeah, that's exactly what happened. So he hires me as general manager. About a week later, he hires me as general manager and fires Bristow. So now we win 11 games. The season is over. And I call Hanslick, and T.R. Dunn was, you know, who is a dear friend and a teammate, former teammate, played at Alabama. And I call him in the office, and I mean, they had to know this is coming. They won 11 games. I said, well, Bill, we're going to have to let you and your staff go. And Hanslick said, is this your choice or Charlie's choice? Well, I don't want to throw Charlie under the bus. So I said, well, I'm sorry, Bill, but it was my choice. We have to go in a different direction. And to this day, Hanslick has now talked to me again.
Damn. So.
I had the I've got a couple. No, I can't. We don't have time to tell all my Bristow stories. But when Gene Littles went on the bench, and I was doing TV and college scouting and some advanced, and we went down on the bench when Dick Harder was fired. So Bristow was brought in as Carl was the president, Carl Sheard.
Right.
Bristow was, I guess you would call him the GM there with the Hornets at that point in time. So we last the rest of that year, then the next year, and that summer, Bristow goes to the owner and sabotages Gene Littles. We had a year left on our contract. He takes over, brings Hanslick in, and Dave Tworzyk, who's a good friend of mine, I like Dave, he became director of player personnel. So I'm sitting there with a year on my contract. And Bristow calls me in one day, and you know how he is. He's like a
stoic. Let's be nice and say stoic.
Okay. I'll go with you. And he says, look, we don't need you around here anymore. And I said, well, Alan, I got a year on my contract. He said, just go home. I said, well, you're going to pay me. Yeah, we're going to pay you. So I go home. So I'm home about 3 weeks in September, late September. I go home. I get this call from Tworzyk, not Alan, Tworzyk, who to this day is a friend of mine. I like him a lot. And he says, I need to talk to you. I said, sure. Where you want to meet, Dave? He said, well, come to the office. I said, Dave, he told me just to go home. I can't come to the office. No, you come to the office. I want to talk to you. So I go. He says, come at this time. Alan won't be here. So I go in, and we shut the door. He said, Mike, I'm really sorry about this. I've got to talk to you because Alan doesn't want to talk to you after he told you got to go home. But the owner has told him, you can't sit at home and draw that paycheck. You got to do something. And so Alan wants you to help me because of your background in scouting with the scouting. And the advanced scouting and college scouting. And I said, okay, that's, you know, it gets me out to get to see people. And, you know, it's not going to hurt me. I mean, staying home is one thing, but
right.
You still feel connected.
And I'm guessing if they're paying you your salary as an assistant coach, you're a pretty well-paid scout at that,
yeah,
at that point.
Yeah, I was. That's
yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
The expansion teams didn't make what everybody else made, but it was nice sitting home money. So I worked that whole year, used to do the scouting, put a lot of pride into the advanced scouting, and I'd send it back to Bristow and your guy Hanson, and I was told they just tore the front page off that had the starters and nothing else. They had they could care less about the X's and O's of basketball. But that's your boy, Alan Bristow.
That's Alan. Tomorrow we have
Ms. Tharp
from the UK volleyball
team.
That'll
and
be fun.
We're going to have her. She's a Louisville lady, and we'll have her at 10:30 tomorrow morning.
All right. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you again tomorrow at 10 o'clock on Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel.
The toughest jobs are...
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 per hour plus a $175 weekly bonus for some shifts. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Bet Rivers Sportsbook has supercharged its iOS app. Download the update today from the Apple App Store and see the difference for yourself. Must be 21 or over to play. Playable only in Indiana. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.